It's the Fabric Podcast. When we start looking at big issues we care about, but whose scope quickly overwhelms, it's so easy to feel buried or to let ourselves bury our own heads in the sand. Well, these weeks, we're trying to stay rooted and help ourselves and others grow to be unearthed and to unearth some possibility in the face of these big things. Here's Ian McConnell.
Throughout this series that we're doing, Unearthed, so we started many weeks ago now in a series called Rooted, and we talked about what does it mean for us to be rooted in ourselves, in community, in all others on this planet, and what does it mean for us to be rooted in God or the divine, and kind of be, you know, that three-stranded wovenness. And out of that then emerges, how are we unearthed? How do we look up from just ourselves and look at some of these big issues in the world? We talked about political polarization the last couple weeks, and we solved it. We figured it out, didn't we? We figured it out. And so now, you know, we've got time. So we're gonna solve climate crisis together. Yeah. All right. So that's what we're gonna do with good courage, looking at big stuff. How do we take big things and kind of make it a little more manageable? So I wanted to start today just in kind of a reflection on wisdom traditions like the one that we emerge from, right? From Christianity, which I think is both a wisdom tradition and a tradition that borrows from other wisdom traditions. And in one of the there's two creation stories in the first book of the Bible, right? Genesis. Two different, opposing sometimes, creation stories. And in the second of the two, in Genesis 2, it says that Yahweh, God, took the human and settled him in the garden to farm it and to take care of it. And I think as we think about ourselves and our relationship to the earth, to all the rest of creation, and indeed to each other, we have this responsibility, we have this job to do, to care about all of it, to tend to it well. That's the job we've been given. And I think when we abandon our responsibility to the earth and to each other and to this task, myself included, believe that this job that we've been entrusted with, I think we're seeing the net impact of that in our world. How many of you kind of follow climate change? Do you follow it? I feel like this is something that we care deeply about because we have to. Like, how the earth goes, so go we, right? Not a good look for us to not to not care about it, right? But it's also something where when we talk about climate change, unlike political polarization, where this isn't that's an issue where we see it happening in our lives, in our interpersonal relationships with parents and siblings and aunts and uncles and grandparents and neighbors and coworkers, and like political polarization hits us right in the face, right in the gut. And this is one of those issues that seems to me almost like too big for me to do anything about myself. It feels overwhelming. So by show of hands, how many of you feel a certain sense of impending dread or despair or even denial about that? I am so glad I'm not alone. Look around, note that you are not alone in that dread. And so luckily, we can and we get to look up from whatever feelings we have, right? So again, I'm going to reiterate, whatever you're feeling, notice that in your body. Feel free to get up, move around, shake it off if you need to. Express it however feels right for you. But we're going to be looking up from ourselves and noticing those feelings in our bodies to see a bigger picture, to let ourselves sort of soften into curiosity, and to brave uncertainty together. And today, I'm really happy to say that we have a guest with us, a guide in this work, to share with us how he approaches problem solving and his work with challenges that are just so big. So Joshua Lewis is a climate justice movement organizer for Minnesota Interfaith Power and Light. He developed canvassing skills, organizing in communities and labor unions across the country for Working America AFL-CIO as a field director, and now is utilizing those skills and developing as an organizer in the Twin Cities. As a father of a five-year-old, Joshua is passionate about building community capacity, both instrumentally and intrinsically, to improve public health outcomes and well-being in our most underserved communities. This work comes in the form of outreach and engagement that connects households and institutions to resources like those offered by the Inflation Reduction Act, as well as empowering individuals with the awareness of their ability to create change through governing bodies' decision-making around energy and waste management. So please help me welcome Joshua Lewis to the conversation. Welcome.
Glad you're here.
I'm happy to be here with you all and thankful for that wonderful introduction. This feels like a very special place. I really love the aspects of being able to find comfort and movement of your body. I feel like so often it's something that is left out of the conversation. But ultimately, when we are faced with anxiety, when we're faced with tension, when we're faced with conflict in our communities and decision-making and all these different ideas and the opportunity that we have feedback loops in our body, right? It can make us feel anxious or make us feel stressed out. And I like to, in the past, when I had canvassers who were door knocking, whether it's election work or issue-based work, to say that's, right, refer back to the metaphor and also literal analogy of that energy is your ancestors, right? It's your ancestry. It's something that's been designed to communicate information to you from your bodily state to help guide you in your decision-making process. It's not something to run away from or to be fearful of. But oftentimes when we are feeling that anxiety or that buildup, what we need to do is move. That's what we're designed to do as human beings, to be upright and to look around and be processing information. Mm. I wanted to say I'm very impressed by the structures you guys have put here and happy to be here.
Love to invite you, Joshua, to tell us a little bit more about yourself and your work with Minnesota Interfaith Power and Light and anything else you'd want us to know about that.
Awesome.
Yeah.
So that's myself and my daughter, Meraki. When she grows up, she wants to be an engineer, astronaut, doctor, and a rock star. Behind us is the beautiful Lake Joanna, one of over 10,000 pristine lakes of the North Star State. I personally grew up in Cleveland, Ohio, raised by former farmers, collecting rainwater, gardening, shepherding beagles and coon hounds as hunting dogs, playing football, baseball with friends, traveling to my great-grandparents' farm in rural Alabama, spending my young summers in the red clay, hunting, fishing, while dodging fire ants and ground wasps. I'm the great-grandson of Reverend Woodson Lewis, who's a 70-plus year senior pastor of Little Mount Zion, the church baptized in fire, not once, but twice. He spoke at the Hate Crime Summit of 96. It was put on by the Bible Belt State Attorney Generals and President Clinton. And in his speech, it was so simple and pure. And he was about 94, 95 years old, so nearly 100 years old when he gave it. He just wanted to thank his local community in rural Alabama and the Quaker Mennonites from the East Coast who traveled down to help rebuild his church, as it had doubled in size after the second time that it was burned down by some antagonists in the South. I'm the grandson of Prophetess Daisy Simmons and son of two beautiful, resilient people in Sherry and Thomas. I've spent the better part of my life in intergenerationally linked communities where my neighborhood block was all family and friends, and I was safe and free to explore the world and myself. And I found myself identifying with the intentional process of the community building culture that
I was born into, and I found it seamless to be able to apply my way of being, ideally, in my everyday life. Except for the occasional email or administrative task, I admit that takes a little more effort for me. I have an older sister who is a party thrower and a real people person, and when we convene, we celebrate our gratitude and show reverence to our loved ones and those resting in paradise, and we part, we promise to continue carrying on tradition. A big part of that tradition is our relationship with the community and with nature. I carry on as a climate justice organizer for MNIPL. We are a multiracial, predominantly women-led organization on the forefront of climate justice work in Minnesota. We work with dozens of other environmental and racial justice organizations and help to bring the moral voice of equity to the climate movement space. Our new mission statement is Minnesota Interfaith Power and Light works to forge an equitable green future and to repair the harms that extraction and greed have brought to the planet and people. We do so by fostering relationships and community, advancing systemic change, and empowering individuals and groups to take practical actions for decarbonization and climate justice. Our core work over the past 10 years was to organize and do deep base building within a network of 400 faith communities in Minnesota. I would say in the 100% steering coalition, it was probably about an 8-year process before I joined MNIPL that the work began happening and building up the statewide network and infrastructure that was needed to generate the support to get a passage through our legislature for 100% clean energy by 2040 here in Minnesota. And I would say MNIPL and Honor the Earth and Indigenous Rights Organization were the tip of the spear in this fight for equity being passed in this. In about the 11th hour of 100% being passed, there were some more centrist environmental groups that wanted to push for keeping incineration, specifically, it's a form of waste dealing that can produce some energy, but unfortunately is one of the most carbon-intensive sources of energy that is possible and also has really negative public health impacts on the local communities that incinerators are found in, especially if they're in dense and vulnerable communities. They wanted to sneak that in as a source of clean energy. And also they wanted to add in a contract to a firm that wanted to use hydropower just on the other side of Wisconsin, saying, well, it won't count towards the damage to the ecology here in Minnesota if we do it over there, but we knew that would damage some of tribal lands in Wisconsin. And it was something we found ourselves ethically opposed to, and we had to speak up in that situation to push back. So I would say we were successful in speaking up. I would say we were annoying in our steering coalition as the group that was saying, hey, we want this, but we're not going to allow it to go forward with this step. And the rest of the group agreed or ended up coming to an agreement to allow it to move forward without that. Nevertheless, we were faced with a challenge of, okay, fast forward a year, after the passage of 100% campaign, we no longer had the infrastructure of that power group, that steering committee of our 100% campaign, but we were still short on coming towards our goals of reaching equity, ensuring that the investment would be best for all of the populations in our state and would be investing in communities to detangle and improve upon previous issues that policy has created for people of color, for Black people, for Indigenous people here. So we created the Rise and Repair Coalition to fight for higher amounts of equity, and get into that as we go through the conversation. Yeah.
Well, yeah. Thank you for that, Joshua. As we're doing this Unearthed series with the awareness that there are these big issues, and there's a lot of maybe conflicting interests and everything in these issues, it can feel too big and overwhelming to really know how to look at it. But we also know that we're called to muster the courage to talk about this stuff, right? Not only by the divine through, ancient wisdom and also kind of a felt need that we have in our own selves, in our communities, but also because there's a practical need and consequence to taking action or not. So I'm wondering if you would mind telling us how you, as a person who cares deeply about people and about creation itself, how do you approach big stuff like climate change? How do you, in yourself, approach that?
It's a great question. Before I joined MNIPL, I spent about 7.5 years doing labor organizing and issue-based working-class advocacy, community lobbying in communities really all across the country, mainly in the cities of Cleveland, Philadelphia, Durham, and Chapel Hill, North Carolina, Atlanta in Georgia, St. Louis, Missouri, and then here in Twin Cities, finding to raise wages and pass more things along the lines of healthcare. And I would train folks to go out and door knock. And we would get up to 100 folks. It was a union paid job. And they got paid at least a living wage. I'm really proud to say in those moments. And there were often times when folks were dealing with anxiety. It's a big thing to go out and talk to strangers, talk to 50 strangers every day, say, as an example. And it can weigh on folks very heavily. And a large tool that I would utilize in training them, and it's because of its impact in my own personal life, are the circles of concern and circles of influence. Has anyone here ever heard of the circle of concern and the circle of influence? Yeah. I heard.
Which we've used here before.
Yeah, Bernie told me that. Yeah. That's something you guys heard about. And I guess if I can play some algebra, there's an equation I really love. It's E plus R equals O. And that's environment plus your response equals the outcome. And I'm using environment there in a more metaphorical term, not the literal ecological environment, but in a way it's an example of that. It's the environment of just our context in general, largely internally as well, and how we're feeling in a moment. And I would say plugging into that equation is something that's been really useful for me. If the environment is that inside I'm feeling anxious, right, and we have a desired outcome of lowering our anxiety, and we have to explore some solutions and do a little bit of that mathematical tool of guess and checking, right? It may be that we need to move around, or we need to exercise, or we need to talk to someone about this, and seeing the connection in that feedback loop to our actions and what we're trying, and ultimately understanding that we're not alone in solving these problems. And in our anxiety, I believe, is a large part of that. As humans, as social creatures, I believe that we're born with what's most important for us to engage with and flourish in our world, right? A giraffe is born and can already run, right? Because it's vulnerable out in the Serengeti, right? And we as humans, we're born, you see a helpless baby, right? They can't walk, can't do much. So how does this metaphor apply to a child? What can a child do? A child can observe what's happening outside of its world and inside of its world. And while it might not have the vocabulary to speak it coherently, they can communicate, right? They can cry. And I feel like as humans, that ability to communicate is one of the most important things we have, to observe, listen, and also to communicate. So,
I love that. Would you talk a little bit about the stakes in this work and what the most significant barriers to solving some of these problems seem to be?
Yeah. So the way I like to answer this question is, what's next for MNIPL and the work that we're doing? So I'll give a little bit of context. For the past 10 years, MNIPL have been doing the practical work of helping our congregations and other local businesses get to yes on solar and energy efficiency projects. And after the passage of 100% campaign, we knew that it's promised, right? We got it passed. By 2040, we're going to make it happen, but it's not going to unfold by itself. We really need to get organizing in our communities. Mm-hmm. So we launched a couple of, big projects, and together with MN350 and the EJ table and many of our allies and faith organizations across the state, we were able to hold the line on many bills in 2023 and pass MINCIFA, or the Minnesota Innovation, Climate, and Finance Authority, which is essentially a Minnesota Green Bank that will ensure that we have dollars that are reserved for our most underserved communities. When it comes to equity, we remember that the devil is in the details if we truly want equity. And in the slide right before this, when you can see me testifying for a bill asking for an equity analysis in the emerging energy workforce, because ignorance is not an excuse for inequity. And also on the left, there's a district meeting with my state senator, Zainab Mohammed, and the group of folks that turned out just from my district of the 1 of 67 during our Rise and Repair lobby day on March 12th. And answering the question of, where we're going, I had a blessing of being able to work with a class from the University of Minnesota Humphrey School. I had 27 students that were working on projects that were focused around our spokes, around the hub of resiliency and community planning in the Phillips neighborhood, which isn't that far from here. And according to the Environmental Index Fund, is the second most environmentally vulnerable community within the state of Minnesota. And they worked on projects, getting qualitative data on how individuals are relating to energy and democracy, the governing bodies around energy, and their understanding there. Also on a meta-analysis of best practices and resiliency, and they did a quantitative survey on emergency preparedness as well to uncover what some of the largest needs are within the community, because we cannot go in as a hammer looking to nail the problem. Ultimately, when it comes to outreach and engagement in our communities that are less invested in, we need to go in and understand what the barriers are in the interfacing of policy, of the monies and opportunities that have been made available by the president and by the state, and build the bridge that way. So
you one of the next or new opportunities here is so activating at the intersections and then interstitial resilience networks. I'm so curious about what that means. What's an interstitial resilience network?
Yeah, so interstitial, I'll define as it's the space in between. We have some city sponsored resilience hubs that are emergency preparedness director and resilience hub directors, and Tony and Barrett at the city of Minneapolis are focused on getting the ground running on, and we have locations there. But we also have an understanding, and I'll give a little bit of context to this story as well. A couple of years ago, there was a rate case by our energy company, Xcel Energy. All right, we want to make sure we have great power, don't have a lot of blackouts. I think Xcel does a great job with that. But Xcel had made a proposal, a 10,000-page proposal, that they wanted to raise rates by 21% for the ratepayer, and they had 10,000 pages of other policy plans that they wanted to change, and this was coming right on the heels of two back-to-back years of record-breaking profits. And as I would say, I found door-knocking on this issue in the community, I mean, 99% of folks don't understand that it is an investor-owned utility. They do have built-in profits in their model, and the decisions around their rate of equity and ROI are made by a board that's called the Public Utility Board, which are judges that are appointed by the governor, and they sit for 6-year terms here in Minnesota. It's dictated by the different Different states have different term limits that they decide upon and how the nomination works, but that's how it works here in Minnesota. And they wanted to have a guaranteed increase to their profits, guaranteed increase to the base rate that ratepayers are paying, and this is coming right after the pandemic and different economic issues that we've had, and this is also in the context of policy they have written that unfairly charges folks who live in multifamily homes, which more often than not, we find in our city, in our most populated, densely populated areas of their territory. And the science actually shows, and part of being an official intervener through the Just Solar Coalition was we sponsored and hired expert testimony from people from across the country. And they uncovered in their policy that they're charging people more money, even though it costs them less to provide it. Mm. And more often than not, these are people who were more underserved and less represented in the governing bodies. Mm. And we took issue with that.
Yeah.
And in the negotiation room, I was lucky I wore a button-up shirt that day. It's only the second time in our country that a community group has been a part or been an intervener in this decision-making process. The first was in Colorado. And we, as our community coalition, thought, okay, yeah, we'll go here for 4 hours, and after we're going to go to this church. They're going to have the farm animals out. We're going to have dinner. It's going to be a great time. So I dressed with that in mind. I was like, okay, I'll go here, then I'm going to go here. But that wasn't what was in store for the day. It ended up being an eight-hour session of negotiations in a room full of lawyers and a magistrate that oversaw it and was going back and forth between us and the lawyers for XL. And I remember a moment when the magistrate said, hey, we want to get the ball rolling and see if they're willing to play ball on any of these things. But before XL will talk about anything policy-wise, they want to get an agreement on the increase to the ROI. And we went around the circle. It was the attorney general had lawyers there. Target had some of their major industrials for the state of, for that territory, had a lawyer there. There were a few other folks, Fresh Energy, Citizen Utility Board, Department of Commerce. We were all in the same room, essentially negotiating on the other side of XL. And I was quiet at this point, feeling the pressure of, okay, like I'm the only black person in this room. I'm the only person of color here. But two, I'm the only person who feels that this is egregious, that we give them what is most significant before we have spoken about anything that's important to us. And part of this negotiation process, it's considered a natural monopoly. And there's a status quo that's established that has continued historically speaking. And folks are, normally XL gets their way because they have a significant amount of power, a significant amount of lobbying efforts as well, and spending money on campaigns and elections across the state. And I dared to ask the question, if we give XL everything they want, what is our leverage for getting any of the changes that we need? And why don't we... Sure, we can give them that ROI, but we make it with the demand of our basic minimums as well as a group. And I feel like it was a pivotal moment in that negotiation process, and I feel like I found the reason why I was there. And to fast forward, after 2 days of settlement negotiations, the negotiation failed and it went to trial, and the judges ultimately denied the rate increase and denied the ROI increase. And I felt a large thank you. I feel a large reason was because we decided to live with some creative visionary leadership and to imagine, okay, what could be different in this moment? And to circle back to the resiliency hubs, after that decision was made by the judges, a large chunk of the investment at that time in the resilience hubs, about it was 10.8. It was between $8 and $11 million XL had pledged.
A lot of money.
A lot of money.
Yeah.
XL, and it's I mean, certainly not chump change to any of us, but to a company like Excel, it's not a ton of money for them. They decided, because of inflation, it no longer works out for them to give this money to the resilience hubs that are located in the Sabathany Center, which is near here, the American Indian Center on East Franklin. It's going to open up, and also there's one in North Minneapolis, is at an elementary school that Renewable Energy Partners is running. Excel said, okay, this money that we originally decided and you guys have been planning and hiring people, making decisions to move forward with, we can no longer do that because of inflation.
Yeah.
And I felt it was somewhat of a retaliation, but it also motivated me to understand, okay, what was that money really going towards? It was going towards some of our most vulnerable communities and investing in solar, battery backup, and hookups for breathing machines and dialysis machines so that people who, if we experience a power outage during a heat wave or during a storm of some sort, the people who are normally hurt the most in these times have a place that they can go to and be connected to, and it could literally save lives. Mm-hmm. And so, okay, Excel is retaliating, or has this power that they can literally take away, and we see through the pandemic and supply chain disruption and other issues that the communities that are hurt most are the ones that are most vulnerable, that Excel would take this money away from the most vulnerable community because they were not given the increase to their profit margin that is already a historic profit margin. And I decided, okay, well, first of all, those spaces aren't enough for our community anyway. And second of all, I don't like the fact that we are so, that they have so much power in this space. So I wanted to address two questions. One, how could we add capacity to our resilience framework in our communities? And two, how could we make it so it's not dependent upon an authority like Excel as well, and that we, from the grassroots in our communities, are at the helm of it?
Yeah.
So that interstitial resiliency is a space between geographically,
yep.
But not only geographically, it's also within the power structure, a space in between the decision-making bodies of the main resilience hubs. And then also a large component of it is not just the instrumental investment or the investment in the electricity grid and the monies that are needed there, but it's also the social capacity and understanding that in our communities, we raised our hands here talking about the climate crisis. But in many of the communities that I work in, folks are dealing with very immediate needs, such as how are they going to feed their family that day, or whether it's senior care or child care, or they have serious infrastructure issues with their home or their apartment that they're living in. Mm-hmm. And oftentimes, talking about the climate crisis with folks who have an immediate need that day isn't as effective. Mm-hmm. And one thing that I discovered was, in order to have these conversations, we need to be connecting in a way that is comprehensive culturally, and also is addressing some of the mutual aid that is needed as well, whether it's in the form of food or childcare, to ensure that we're lifting up those communities while simultaneously moving forward with the work that we need to get done to address the climate crisis.
Oh, I love that. Thank you for your work. One of the things I'm noticing in this whole conversation is that I feel like what I've been told about climate change and what I can do about it has a lot to do with choices I make in, like, recycling and turning the lights off when I'm not in a room. But what I'm hearing from you, like, your knowledge base on this stuff is way, 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 way higher than I knew existed. And it seems like it's more than just turning the lights off. It's more than just recycling. It's more, you know what I mean? And so I'm hearing this, like, this thought on a network and being involved in a network. And I think when we're talking about climate, the climate crisis and climate justice, or really about any other big issue, like big problem where we need to solve problems, it doesn't feel like, and correct me if I'm wrong, but I can't do a whole lot on my own. But if I can be a part of an interstitial resiliency network,
yeah,
we can work together to get things done. And what I heard in your story of showing up is that you weren't certain about what your role was until it became clear.
Yeah.
You didn't know what was your role until you did.
Yeah.
And you asked the question and moved something forward. Right?
That's right. 100% accurate.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So in the spirit of not wrapping things up with a tidy bow, in the spirit of braving uncertainty together, you're going to find on the back of your Sunday paper, there's this QR code. It has the resources that we had on political polarization, but you'll also find on there a new list of things from MNIPL that Joshua has given to us to become involved in. So noting that, like, one little yes today to even learning something new or to showing up as a volunteer or educating yourself, that might end up being an invitation into something bigger. And this is something bigger that we can be part of. Before we wrap up our time, do you have any sort of final thoughts or challenge or invitation for the community that is Fabric?
I do. You mentioned the text of the three strands of the thread,
yeah,
that weave together. And you mentioned you use the metaphor here to describe it to yourself,
yeah,
your community, and God.
Yeah, yeah.
And that's really beautiful. And I wanted to just mention that at MNIPL, we use a three-legged stool approach to organizing.
Mm.
And just to give an option to folks here as well, I know I spoke a decent amount about politics and power building, and I would like to share that you don't necessarily have to get involved in a political front to make a difference in the climate crisis.
Mm-hmm.
And I'll add that participating in our community and being mindful, mm-hmm, and turning our lights off and are very valuable, both, mm-hmm, for the climate and also for ourselves as well, and our rituals of our day-to-day lives and the mindfulness that we apply and the awareness that we're growing in. But I also just share that other aspects of that thread, other than policy, are relational.
Mm-hmm.
And building community with folks that are maybe different from us or appear to be different from us.
Mm-hmm.
A quote that I really love and utilize in my outreach is from the Dalai Lama, where he says that know that when you meet a stranger for the first time, that there is more in common between the two of you than you could learn in multiple lifetimes.
Mm-hmm.
So going in with that assumptive confidence in an interaction, but also with the meekness to go in and say there's a mystery to be explored here.
Yeah.
And to be present in exploring that on an individual level, on a social level, and also on our relationship with God, I believe is very powerful to do. And let's see, I was talking about the threads. We have the policy.
Mm-hmm.
We have the relational in our society. And I also just add on in the implementation as,
yeah,
well. At that link, you'll find some information on your own carbon footprint and the rebates that are available through the Inflation Reduction Act, so you could save money and have it paid for as well. But I would talk to each other, and I challenge folks here, I know that you're going to meet next week and, mm-hmm, and reflect on this, to talk about how can you expand the tent and your outreach to include others that maybe have a different background from,
yeah,
you, or maybe have different needs from you in the immediate sense, and see the humanness as well, and participate in the celebration of Earth Day as the celebration of an ancestor that we share together, and ultimately being curious and being in communication with and building relationships with others,
yeah,
on our planet is one in which we are doing with God and love in our heart.
That feels
Thank
like
you.
A good place to wrap it for today. Can we give a big round of applause for our guest, Joshua? Thank you for being here with us today.
Thank you.
I appreciate you.
Thank you.
Thanks for listening. May this simply be the start of the conversation. Reach out if you want help connecting with a group virtually or in the Twin Cities. and tag @FabricMPLS with your own thoughts on social media. You can also stay up to date and find other resources on our website, fabricmpls.com.